Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
When 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory. After 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron, tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to football, gridiron greats, football history, and its memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Spook Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We'll cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It's at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, great to be on the show. Great to be on the show. Love it.
We had a little technical issue there. My apologies on it. I finally got things going and a couple minutes behind schedule, but we're ready to go.
Yeah.
And we're going to
dive
right in and talk a bit about something I'll be doing on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that is the National Sports Collectors Convention live from the Atlantic City Convention Center in beautiful downtown Atlantic City, New Jersey. And it's been a few years since I've been there. I'm setting up with Midwest Vintage Cards, good friend of Gridiron Greats Magazine, Josh Adams, and I will be sharing a booth. And long story short, I'm looking forward to going. It's going to be my first show that I'm actually setting up at in 3 years. It's been a long time. And long story short, I got everything packed. I got everything shipped there.
Good.
Hopefully everything got delivered. And I'll be checking later tonight. Make sure the newest issue, Gridiron Greats Magazine, will be there. We'll be selling subscriptions, back issues, so on and so forth. Joe, what's your favorite memory of the National?
Well, you nailed half of it. Josh Adams setting up at a BSP booth with Spano and Becker, sitting on a couch, just dinners afterwards. I'm sorry to be missing. Last year in Chicago was amazing. I took my son, Alexander. Obviously, hung out with the VFC boys for pizza and afterwards. I mean, the National is, it's about meeting friends and about having fun more than it is about the show. The first couple Nationals I went to, I was scouring for cards, but now it's, like last year, I went one day, and after that, I was hanging out with everybody. It's amazing, but most of my good memories revolve around hanging out at that booth, with Josh Adams, BST, and Gridiron Greats Football.
Yeah, it's fun reconnecting with people, a long time collectors, dealers, friends that I've known for years. And I started going back to the National, I believe it was 2008 or 2009, and then I started setting up I went in 2008, and then I started setting back up in 2009, which was actually one of the first Nationals I set up at. I've attended Nationals in the past, but it's a much different story when you're on the other side of the table there and you're set up and talking to people. And I do agree with you. It's more people than anything else as far as going. It's a lot.
You've told me before. I mean, you get not trapped is the wrong word, but you get behind the booth, and you know you're there to service customers. I'm there to bop by and check. I'm able to just bop around a little bit, I guess. So you know, there's a big difference, you know. But
exactly.
Amazing. It's just I'm sorry to be missing, but if I'm going to miss one, it's going to be Atlantic City. It's tough to get to from the West Coast.
I got a real strong feeling that after this one in Atlantic City, they're going to just start making it in Chicago permanently. I think that's my gut feeling of what's going to happen, because again, they seem to get a pretty good mix of dealers, even though all the tables are sold off for this national, and there are going to be some West Coast dealers there. So it's still going to be, you know, an actual national convention. So it's interesting that, you know, as much as a lot of the West Coast dealers and collectors say, you know, they don't want to fly out, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But you still got a lot of people who are flying out and are going to check it out at the same time. So it'll be a good show, I'm sure. It'll be interesting to see where the hobby's at, what's going on.
Yep.
It's interesting looking at where the table, we're going to be at booth 1904 for anybody who's going to be there and wants to check us out. And we're near all the mega exhibition booths, so it should be pretty interesting to see the flow of people going by the table to get to the booths for their free giveaways and so on and so forth. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm getting excited about it.
Yeah.
I will be there the full 5 days. I will be there Sunday also this year, and then I'm flying back on Monday morning.
I
decided not to drive because it was only an hour and 15-minute flight from Myrtle Beach to Atlantic City, and that's just too quick for me to pass up as far as I've been a 12-hour drive to get there. So, but again, I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun.
Wanted to chime in there. Robert Edward Auctions, REA, and the president of REA, Brian was on the show,
yep.
What was it, about a year and change ago, Brian Dwyer?
Yep. Yep.
REA used to be a once-a-year auction that was, you know, a 300-page catalog, then they went to twice a year, and recently they started doing, every other month, you know, a smaller auction, and
sure.
Then they have a big one once a year. Well, their REA's auction popped this morning, and if you haven't checked it out, I highly suggest going to look at it. There's a Bronco 35 Chickle Bronco Nagurski PSA 7. I'm going to have to check the cert numbers, but I think it's the one that I used to own that I, you know, got from Andy Becker, you know, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A plethora of unopened wax 64. Philly, Cello, 69, you know, wax packs, 72, 74, 77. I mean, just all kinds of wax packs, boxes, all the way up. Some 33 Sports King, Jim Thorpe, Red Grange, both in PSA 8. Joe Namath, PSA 8. If this is their every other month auction, this is an amazing auction. Somebody's really... Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And I'll be checking out Brian's booth there at the National and stopping and saying hi, along with our friends from Leland's, longtime advertisers with Gridiron Greats Magazine. And now from Love of the Game Auctions, we'll be seeing him. And on our new auction house, that's Collectors Connection, who was advertised with us, Scott Russell. I'll be talking to him there also. So we're going to have a lot of people from Gridiron Greats advertising there, and we're going to be there ourselves with a new issue, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it, to say the least. All right, at this time, our special guest is here. I don't want to keep him waiting any longer because we got a lot to cover with him tonight. I'd like to introduce my special guest. He is the historian, the expert, and has one of the largest collections of Michigan Wolverines football memorabilia in the country. He was a guest on our show way back when, in September 18, 2013. And he is the author of a new book, The Ultimate Michigan Football Program and Ticket Guide. I'd like to welcome tonight to our show, Mr. Ken McGee. Ken, welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you very much. Let's do a radio check here, as technology has advanced over the years, but sometimes it's not foolproof. How do you hear me?
I'm always amazed at technology, and I normally get all this stuff prepared an hour beforehand, and whatever was going on between Blog Talk Radio and my computer was nasty. So,
I just want to make sure you can hear me okay right now. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
Are we all
we're
set?
Good. We're good.
Outstanding. Thanks. Joe, nice to hear your voice. Bob, nice to hear from you again, and I'm pleased to be on your podcast.
Thanks for coming on, Ken. And I want to lead off by asking, and if you could tell our audience again, how did you become interested in football in general, and in particular, University of Michigan football?
Well, little Kenny McGee was born in 1958 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And so that starts it all right off. My mom would take me to the games when I was a little boy, and then there was a time when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I could just ride my bike to the stadium by myself. My mom would give me $1 to get in, and I'd sneak into the games, $1 to buy a hot dog and a Coke.
And then
in 1969, a gentleman by the name of Bo Schembechler moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and his kids went to my elementary school. So thus began a lifelong friendship with the Schembechler family. I played lots of sports with Jeff Schembechler, Bo's second son. He had 4 children. 3 of them were adopted with his wife, Millie, who had him before the marriage. And then his fourth son's name was Shemmy, and Shemmy's one of my best friends, and he's Bo's only biological son. But just known the Schembechlers over the years, and when you're born and raised in Ann Arbor, Michigan, you learn to sing the Victors before you learn to sing any other song.
I like that. That's good.
I love that.
Bob and Joe, I often tell this story too, that when you're in nursery school, you learn the colors, and quite frequently, and I was one of the candidates for this, quite frequently, when the teacher gives you all the blocks and tells you to put all the blocks, like the green ones over there and the red ones over there and the white ones over there, quite frequently I would put blue and yellow together because blue and yellow always go together. So,
word.
With that being said, it's the way they raise us in Ann Arbor, Michigan, to love the maize and blue.
I love it. That's great. Adamant fans like you, Ken, are so hard to come by. And I love that. And I guess it's perhaps being born, you know, in the shadow of Ann Arbor, like you said. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I'm a huge Seahawks fan because they're the sports team we have locally. But, you know, like, I don't live and die by it. If the Seahawks lose on a Sunday, it doesn't ruin my week. I suppose if you're born in Seattle or whatever, but I think college fans have a much more fervent following than pro does, for some reason.
Absolutely. And I can relate to a little bit of what you're talking about. My career was, I was a federal agent. I traveled all around the world. I lived in numerous places. And one of them was Portland, Oregon. I lived several years in Portland, Oregon. I was even in Oregon when Michigan traveled out to Oregon to play Oregon. And sadly, Michigan lost that football game that day. But much to the happiness of all my neighbors and my colleagues in the office, Oregon won. But with that being said, I totally agree with you. There's a completely different at a college game than a pro game. I love them both.
Yep.
But there's nothing like going to the Big House on a Saturday afternoon or a Saturday night game, which is equally 100%. As incredible.
Couldn't agree more. So, I mean, obviously you're born, in Ann Arbor, but – being a fan is one thing. Being a collector is another thing. How do you get into collecting Michigan memorabilia, or is it just a natural segue?
When I was a little boy, my brother collected Detroit Tiger baseball cards, and I decided I'd collect something too. And I just started, when I was going to the Michigan football games, I'd pick up the ticket stubs, or I'd walk around the stadium after the game and pick up discarded programs. And that's how it started, just pre-double digits in my age. I was probably about 8 years old and just started collecting these things. And And some things never change. As my wife and I, when we go to the games today, we still walk around after the game. We call it getting our steps in, and we walk up and down, and we look for discarded ticket stubs. And that's what we do, kind of as a fun little thing. And then afterwards, we go out for a nice dinner. But even before the game, we've gotten so attuned to doing it together. We're riding our game one day, and Dawn stops her bike in the middle of the road. There were two tickets laying on the ground. It was against Michigan State. Somebody had dropped their tickets for the Michigan State game, and she found them on the ground. So we're always looking for tickets. That's the bottom line.
Nice. You mentioned your book, The Ultimate Michigan Football Program and Ticket Guide. I can't find it. I was looking for it. There's one that's very close, Michigan Football Memorabilia Collector Guide by a guy named Brian Snyder, and I was like, man, I wonder if they've ever thumb wrestled over who's the ultimate Michigan fan. But how do you order your book? Where do you find this?
Well, let me stop you right there, because if you found that one, you should be able to find this one, because Brian and I are the co-authors on this. It's the same website. I was a co-author on that one, but I was running for political office at the time we put that book out, and so I took my name off as the co-author. This is basically my fourth book, if you include that collector's guide. The first two books I did on, one was called The Game, the Michigan-Ohio State series. And before that, I wrote with John Stevens, who also helped me on The Game, The Little Brown Jug, the history of the Michigan-Minnesota rivalry. So with that being said, here's how you find it. You go to U like University, Mish, M-I-C-H, football.com, umichfootball.com. And both books are advertised on that website, and there should be some sample pages and other things of that nature. And this is a collaborative effort between Brian Snyder and myself, this book, and we can get into the story on how we put that together. Would you like me to do that now?
There it is. I see it right there. Really, really good looking cover on that, Ken. It looks like the Michigan Football Memorabilia one that you said you co-authored with, but didn't left yourself off. I love the cover of this. Just a colorful splash of ticket stubs and programs. Incredible. Well done.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We wanted the collage effect to give the viewer a good heads up on what they were going to be looking at. And this book looks similar in nature to the collector's guide, but we've got a different color binding. This color binding is yellow, and the other one was blue. And this one is also over 130 pages more. So this is a hardcover book, just like the other one, and it's 680 full-color pages. It's got 2,500 photographs of every Michigan football game, program, and ticket that are known to exist, as well as summaries for every single game Michigan has ever played. So you open up to any given page. Normally there's a total of four pages or four pictures, and that's of a program and a ticket for one game and then a program and a ticket for another with the synopsises of both games. And in some pages we've got some additional ticket stubs and different nuances that we show the viewers. But there's also some other things like the history of the locations where Michigan has played and some things such as how history, American history, and football parallels itself through the cover of programs and the artwork on programs. And we can talk about that in a little bit. But we call it the Ultimate Football Program and Ticket Guide. And I was asked by somebody what I really meant by the ultimate, because the ultimate means the best. And I will say this, and I hope this is not a bold statement, but I believe that this is one of the most unique books ever written in the history of all sports, not just football, not just college football, but all sports to include hockey, basketball, football, baseball, the Olympics, you name it, go down the list. And the reason is because it's a lifetime of work. And not only is it a lifetime of work, but it's a collaborative effort. Bo Schembechler used to have a phrase called the team, the team, the team. And this was definitely a team effort. There was myself and Brian put it together. When we put the collector's guide together, I said, I don't want football programs and tickets in book number one, because that's going to be book number two, because I've been talking about doing that book for over 30 years. As demonstrated by this book, I'm very proud to say, what has an introductory letter by President Gerald Ford. And he died in 2006, and he wrote the letter in the late 90s. So that tells you how long I've been working on it. I was a federal agent working overseas, and I was put in touch with President Ford through a Secret Service detail. I communicated with him about my idea, and he gladly completed a letter of introduction for my book. But I go on back to what I was saying. It's the most unique and different book ever written in the history of sports, because there's no way you're going to be able to put this all together for another school like we did. Well, no one's ever done it. They could do it now. We've given the model. But it also includes over 50 contributors, where I've gotten together with collectors over the years, and I've utilized about 90% of my collection is this book, 80 to 90%. But then I go to historical libraries. I've been to Minnesota to their library. I've been to the University of Michigan Bentley Historical Library. And we put all the collectors together. We got in touch with them. So if there was a complete ticket we were missing, for example, if I needed a 1969 Michigan Vanderbilt ticket, Bo's first game, and I had a stub, I knew somebody who might have a complete ticket. So whenever we could get a complete ticket, we would put that in a book in the color photographs. So I'm extremely excited about its release. The publishers have promised it's going to be with us on August 12th. I'm going to add one other thing about the team, and that is, all the synopses were written by two individuals, and the two individuals, one's name is Bob Rozek, and he lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the other's name is Jim Parker, and he lives in Tumwater, Washington, but he's originally from Ann Arbor. And they both, as a hobby, over the course of their lifetime, wrote synopses on every Michigan football game. So I chatted with both of them, and they both gave me their files. And we allowed us to merge the two files together and create a synopsis of what both of them did. And we put it together. And we've read it over 1,000 times. And hopefully we've gotten all the typos and everything else out. But we have two individuals. And those two gentlemen don't even know each other. They've never even met each other, never even spoke. But they're both great guys and good friends of mine.
I'm looking at the page layout. If you dig down, if you dig down on the web, the page layouts that you have, really, really easy to follow format by date, by game, a picture of the program, picture of the ticket, really incredible. Just a really good, easy to follow layout. I like that.
So, Joe, you can see from what I've said why I feel I could say without hesitation, I think it's one of the most unique books ever written in the history of sports.
Yeah.
Just different. I don't know of any other book like this. There are other great books, don't get me wrong, and better books for that matter. I'm just saying most unique.
When you're trying to put a book together of that nature and I've been contacted by several people, they wanted to do a similar project with the Packers. And I always said, you got to have access to all the different things you want to put in the guide. And I said, that's the tough part. I said, everybody's collection may have a certain run, 60s, 70s, 1920s, or whatever. What you've done is basically, and this is the best part about the book, in my opinion, you got the context necessary to do it from start to finish. And that's what's the most important part of the project. And I give you a lot of credit for that because, again, you've got the context and you have the background in it to find the people who have the information, have the stubs, the program, so on and so forth. And it's truly an amazing book. I mean, anybody who's thinking
go
about
ahead,
this,
Bob.
Like you said, there's a lot of work. But you also have to have the information available. And I think that's the biggest problem with a lot of people doing something like this. Years ago, I got contacted by a couple of Yale fans wanting to use a similar book. And I said, yeah, I had at that time a pretty strong collection of ticket stubs. But I said, there's no way you're going to find every ticket stub, because even Yale didn't keep it back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's incredible, really incredible.
Yeah, and we've done a couple additional things. We realize that we're never going to find everything, but in the book,
right.
For example, if you go back to say in 1904, say Michigan Case game, or the 1905 Ohio Northern game, if we didn't have the ticket stub for that game, we would put an empty box there with the note inside it, no ticket stub is going to exist for this game. Because the idea is we want people to sit there and say, like, oh, Grandpa's got a photo scrapbook that he saved. Let me go look at that. Oh, my gosh, we found that. So it's the idea, too. It's a great reference material, and it lets people know what exists and what doesn't exist or what hasn't been located yet. And that's the way we look at it.
That's
all right,
really good.
I'm curious, Ken, off script a little. How many pieces are you actually missing of stubs and programs? It can't be that many, though.
I in my own collection or for the book? And the answer
for the book. Yeah.
I don't have an answer to that question because
all right.
Michigan started football in 1879. I have the fifth game program ever played, and that was Michigan at
right.
Yale
okay.
in 1881. So
right.
there's a few. That's the fifth game. And then the next game program that exists wasn't until 1891. So there's 10 years of programs right there that we don't have.
Okay.
And the museum doesn't right. have, nobody has. And who knows if they exist? Who knows if they did exist? I don't know. But football was in its infancy at that time. Yale had a much better
right.
grasp on it. They were in their, 12th year at that time, something of that nature. I don't know, maybe a little less than that. But my point is we don't have an exact number on that. I've never been asked that question, but I can easily say much easier how many ticket subs were missing, say, from 1927 to the present when the big house was built. And
yep.
and the answer to that question is one. One is missing. And that's the 1943 Michigan at Camp Grant game. Michigan played at one of the war teams at Camp Grant, 1943. I have the program. The program is just a few pages, and it's a mimeographed piece of paper.
Right.
And there's three of those
right.
known
right.
to exist. But in answer to your question, I know you went off script a little bit, but it's a great question. And maybe one day one of our listeners will go through this book with a checklist, because I've gone through it enough right now. I'm going to let somebody else do it for a while. So what's next, sir?
Amazing.
Bob?
Hey, do you have any new collecting stories to share with our audience? I remember a couple from way back when. What's transpired over the past 10 years, if anything?
Well, you know, I'm not sure which ones we talked about back then, but I love the story about my 1898 Michigan football ticket stub where they played against Chicago. And the interesting thing about that ticket stub is I got contacted by a gentleman on the West Coast. It was when I was living in Oregon. And I got contacted by a person on the West Coast, and they had said, I've got this ticket stub. And I said, I'm on it. So I ended up purchasing from the ticket, and I thought I had the holy grail of tickets. That was the first game that Michigan had defeated Chicago, and 12,000 people attended that game on Thanksgiving Day. And after the game, because Michigan defeated that team from the West, because Chicago was considered a Western team because all the other dynasty teams were on the East Coast, that a gentleman by the name of Louis Elbel wrote a song that later on became known as The Victors, one of America's greatest fight songs ever written. So I got that ticket stub, and I was so ecstatic about it, and I said, I'll never see another one. 6 months later, I get a call, and an individual says, I got a ticket stub from the 1898 Chicago, Michigan game. Do you want to buy it? And I'm like thinking to myself, this has got to be a Xerox copy or something. Sure enough, I ended up getting another one from another dealer, and it turned out that both tickets were side by side, seat by seat. And my theory is somebody had a scrapbook, divided it up, sold it to two different dealers, and both dealers got hold of me because I was I'm very well known in the hobby when it comes to Michigan collectibles. So I love that story. And
Seatmate, I love that. I love those tickets. That's awesome.
Well, and the neat thing about that ticket stuff too is like it's very ornate. It's a beautiful ticket, and not only is it ornate and beautiful, but it was $2 to go to the game. So $2 was a lot then, you know. And it's just a really neat ticket stub, and it's just both of them are in just pristine shape. And, of course, I love the story about picking up the 1881 Yale program. And I love the story about how I was contacted by another collector who decided that he wanted to depart with his 1902 Rose Bowl program. And that program we ultimately made because there were only four or five known to exist, and they definitely cost in the five-figure category. We made replicas of that program with a high-quality scanner and matched the paper back to what it was like in 1902. And we sell replicas of that program in a limited edition mount. And it's a 40-page program with just beautiful photographs and things of that nature. So those are some of the collecting stories I love to tell. But it's interesting, gentlemen. I talk about finding the ticket stub from 1898. So Michigan played in the Orange Bowl this year on New Year's Eve in the championship game to go into the final game for the national championship, and we had earlier in the season beat Ohio State, which put us in the Big Ten championship game where we beat Iowa. Well, there are no tickets for the Iowa-Michigan Big Ten championship game, and there are no tickets for the Michigan-Georgia.
Yep.
National championship semifinal title yep. pursuit. However, what they did do is they created computerized generated tickets for family members and family members only. And I think the theory is they don't want some kids who's playing on a football team's parents getting denied at the gate, trying to find their tickets on their phone, you know? And we talk about the demise and the extinction of tickets based on the fact that telephones and the technology is taking over and becoming your ticket to an admission to an event. But the way I got my Orange Bowl tickets, I stood where the parents walked in at the will call, and I handed out my card saying, I'm doing a book on this Michigan football history. And I told them the whole story, and I gave them my card. And I said, when you're done with your ticket, if you'd like to mail me a ticket back, your ticket, I'll make sure your name gets in the book. And J.J. McCarthy, Michigan's backup quarterback and someday will be the starter, his dad said, if I mail you a few, will you make a donation to my son's charity? And I said, sure. And sure enough, about a month later, Mr. McCarthy
sent nice.
their family's tickets, and I mailed a check to J.J. for the Kids, which is his son's nonprofit organization. So,
Ken, I kind of ribbed you when we were emailing about the show. I sent you the screenshot of, I'm a Red Grange collector. I'm not an Illinois fan. I'm a Red Grange fan. And October 18th, 1924, Illinois, Michigan game, you know, not quite the same, but I mean, Bob and I've talked about it before. It's like, you know, I collect stubs and programs. Stubs are going away. I mean, I get it. It's an electronic age, but I love having momentous of the game. It's the end of an era.
I think it's tragic. I think it's tragic, the extinction of the ticket and programs. The University of Michigan didn't print programs for their home games last year. They're all on the computer now, digitally. And we print them in our book for 1 year and explaining that the paper program is going away, and that's sad.
Yeah.
And yes, I did get that photograph of that beautiful ticket from 1924 where Michigan went to Illinois for the dedication of their Memorial Stadium.
Well,
and you know, that game was significant in many, many ways besides solidifying Red Grain's legend. But I don't know if you know this, Joe, but it was that game. That was the first year Michigan had won the national title the year before. And Yeeling Yo stepped down to become the athletic director. He was so upset that the new coach, a gentleman by the name of George Little, did not win that game, that Fielding Yost fired him and took over again as coaching. Did you know that one?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he did. So he came back and Michigan won the Big Ten title the next year. But 66,000 people went to that game.
Yep. They beat with Illinois that? 3-0. They beat Illinois 3-0 in the 25 game, yeah.
Exactly. So, and Fielding Yost is happy to say that he was the head coach at that time. But, you know, it's a phenomenal game program. It's a beautiful cover, orange, and I'm assuming you have the game program.
I do, yes. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. A beautiful orange program, 50-cent program, several pages, lots of neat stuff in the inside. And the Michigan fans who went down there were pretty disappointed. But they definitely saw history in what I believe at one time was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Red Grange's picture, and they called it one of the greatest performances in the history of college football, him running for 5 touchdowns, 3 of them or 4 of them in the first quarter to include the opening kickoff.
Yep.
So 4 touchdowns in the first quarter and then another one in the third quarter. And, hey, that solidified Red Grange's legend, and who went on to become a 3-time All-American.
Yep, who probably went on to solidify the NFL. I mean, his first game, you know, the Bears against the New York Giants, you know, Mara was, you know, weeping because of the gate receipts, you know, saved the NFL, Grange. So, and it probably all starts with this game, which legitimized Red, you know, which brought attention to Red Grange, which, you know, a year and a half later, he goes to the NFL and, you know, his popularity does. I mean, so I hear you.
He also got involved a little bit in the movies, I believe, didn't he?
One minute to play. I think I'm the only person alive who actually sat down to watch that turn. Somebody took the movie and made it into a VHS and then moved it to a DVD. And like 10 years ago, I bought the DVD and sat down and watched it. And my wife was like, this is garbage. It was so bad.
Yeah. They were kind of funny, those old movies. Tom Harmon, Michigan's Heisman Trophy winner, he starred in a movie right after he got out of college. And then he went on to star in or play in many other movies. He was probably a much better football player and sports announcer than he was an actor, but he was an incredible athlete and a war hero, and you name it. You know, getting back to Red Grange, too, in my collection, I have a game, a board game. It's called A Real Indoor Football Game, made by Gridcraft. And it has on the cover of the box a picture of University of Illinois Memorial Stadium on the date of the dedication homecoming game. Have you ever seen that?
No, but there's another game. No, I have not, but there's another game that, you know, Grange is on the cards with, and I forget the name of it, but I was collecting for some reason.
Okay, well, when we get a chance, I'll send you an email picture of it. Again, while your viewers are listening, too, briefly we gave the website on where you were looking up. I also would like the phone number out there. I'm very open with my phone number, and that is if anybody's interested more in collecting or talking football or getting an appraisal on an item when it comes to Michigan football. And keep in mind, all of these items in this book are Michigan football games. So they're home and away programs. So this isn't just a book for Michigan football collectors. It's got almost every Michigan at Ohio State program and Minnesota programs and Iowa and Purdue and you name it. It's got it.
Yeah.
And but my phone number is area code 503, and the telephone number is 781-3174. Again, it's 503-781-3174. 503-781-3174. And to order the book, you can either contact me at that number, or you can also go to what we described earlier as umichfootball.com. Umichfootball.com.
Ken, nice to see you kept your Portland area code, your 503.
You know, believe it or not, when you're a federal agent, you get transferred a lot. And what happened is when I did two tours in the Pacific Northwest. And so I was living in South America in Bogota, Colombia for 7 years, and I was transferred to Portland, Oregon. And I got this phone number, so I kept the phone number. And what I say, believe it or not, is the reason I collected or saved the phone number and kept it was because of collecting. Because through the course of 10 years, my assignments off and on through Oregon and various parts of the United States, I was always giving out area code 503-781-3174. So if I was to get a new phone number when I moved to Michigan and retired, it would have meant thousands of people that I made contact with on collecting would have not had my phone number. And so I just kept the same old number. And as the world has evolved into much more transient and mobile technology, it's not uncommon for people to be in one state and have another state area code. But
totally.
All right.
But I always had to answer that question every now and then, like, why Oregon? You know, so, well, it certainly wasn't to go watch Michigan.
You may have kept the 503 area code, but you're mispronouncing it. It's Oregon. I mean, I can tell you're not. You may have a 503 area code, but you're not.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny that you said that because I did mispronounce it. And when I said that, I thought to myself, I'd mispronounced that. But I wasn't going to get into it too much. But I quickly learned that when I was there. It is Oregon, not Oregon.
Dang it,
Oregon.
Joe's going to call me.
So, yeah, so, but yes, I'm not originally from there, but I was there visiting a couple of years ago. Michigan was supposed to play Washington. In Seattle, and I flew out to Portland instead. We bought all our tickets, and they canceled the game because of COVID several months before, but I still had my tickets to fly out there. So I went out there and enjoyed the Pacific Northwest and went up to Seattle and went over to Coos Bay and hung out and went down to Columbia Gorge, you name it. So.
What was it, like 8 years ago, Michigan State came to Autzen Stadium and lost to U of O?
I think that was the first game of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, season opener.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
a friend of mine asked me for the tickets, and I'm like, are you kidding me? This is a big game.
Oh, absolutely it was. You know, so when I was living in South America, I would also, right after Christmas, a friend of mine and I, who was another federal agent, we would jump on a cargo plane that a friend of ours owned, and we'd fly into Miami in the middle of the night, and then we'd go get a car, rent a car, and we'd spend the next 7 days in southern Florida. And we would drive, and we would go to bowl games. So one day, for example, we went to the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, which was a day game, drove like hell 5 hours to get to Miami, and we caught the Orange Bowl. So we went to several football games, and we saved all our ticket stubs. And afterwards, we'd walk around and pick up ticket stubs because old habits never break. But we estimated in the 7 years that we were there, we went to 24 different bowl games.
Nice.
So,
it
was a lot of fun.
You've got a pretty extensive collection. What are the top 5-6 items in your collection? What's near and dear to your heart that, you know, that you love?
Well, we talked about some of them. The 1902 Rose Bowl program was probably my holy grail. But believe it or not, I do have my priorities in order, and I was offered somebody. I very rarely sell something out of my personal collection, and somebody offered me an offer that I couldn't refuse. And I had a daughter in college at the time going to DePaul University, a private school, and I sold the program, and then I'll pay for a year of her college. So that was my holy grail. But I would say we touched base on some of the others, 1881 Yale football program, the 1898 Michigan-Chicago ticket stub. There's also an Earl Christie pillowcase cover showing one of the Christie girls and a Michigan football player. It's about 2 feet by 2 feet framed on my wall. But, yes, I do have a lot. I have a collection of probably over 700 buttons, over 1,000 programs, over 1,000 tickets. I've got lots of Tom Harmon memorabilia. But Tom Harmon, to me, is your Red Grange, and that's the way I look at it. And so I have hundreds of pennants, but the pennants from the early 1900s I love. The Gridiron magazine did a Gridiron Greats magazine did a special on my collection at one time and took some wonderful pictures. I have a button
great
from 1902.
I remember that cover. It was amazing.
Oh, he did a Bob did a great job of that. 1902 Rose Bowl button showing Fielding Yost picture on it dangling from a little ribbon. That's one of my favorites. And then there's just a lot of fun things in the collection. It's been a bit, I think ESPN, several other smaller cable TV companies, and you know, they come and tour the museum in the basement because it's right up there with the best. When Michigan, when the University of Michigan redesigned Schembecker Hall, their football facility, they wanted to have a museum with a temporary display, and they contacted me, and I would say about 80% of the museum at Schembecker Hall for a few years was my collection. It was on loan. So lots of fun things. And when you've been doing it for almost 50 years or over 50 years, you get to know a lot of people. And I also have a warehouse filled with all my doubles, because to buy, get one program you might want, you might have to buy a collection of 500 programs. So Lord knows that I've really, I've accumulated a lot of things.
Unbelievable. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, if you're in the Ann Arbor area, you're more than welcome to come visit the collection in the museum, the warehouse. And if you come on a football Saturday, we'll take care of you. My wife and I are involved with an organization called the Military Veterans of the Game. And we honor a veteran at every Michigan football game where in the third quarter they're introduced on the field. And before the game, I present them with a challenge coin that we created. We have a tailgate picnic for them, and I make a special card that looks like a football card, but it shows a picture of them in their uniform back in their service days. And I have them sign the cards for their family members, and I put their data on the back when they served and some of the medals and awards they won. But my point is we have a wonderful tailgate picnic, and you get a chance to meet some incredible people. I've honored two Medal of Honor. Several POWs. One was a POW for almost 2,000 days. And just some of the people we've met are unbelievable. One year we honored a 104-year-old World War II vet. And then over the course of a couple other years, we honored three different Marines. All of them turned 100 years old. And we decided to have a golf tournament where they compete against each other later on that summer. So we went to a putting green, and they competed in three putting competitions. It was pretty neat. And they're wonderful people. But my point
That's
is, fine. You know, I often say if it wasn't for the greatest generation, these World War II heroes, and they won't call themselves heroes, but we certainly can, because had we not, we might not be conducting this interview about American football, but we might be speaking about the game of soccer in a foreign language as opposed to what we're speaking about today. And nothing against foreign languages and nothing against soccer, but I think you catch my drift.
I hear you. I hear you. Last question,
so
Ken.
We open that tailgate to you. We open the tailgate to both of you. So come to the big house. You haven't it's an unbelievable experience. Unbelievable.
I will be picking you up on that.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about veterans of the game, if you want to learn more about veterans of the game, you go to veteransofthegame.org.
All right.
Veterans with an S of the game.org. But
good for
you know, we've
that.
Talked a lot. We've talked about a lot of different things. What else would you all like to know about the book or anything else?
Last question, because we're almost out of time, Ken. Any advice for beginning collectors, and one more time on your book where we can order?
Sure, absolutely. My advice to collectors is I've been fortunate that I've been able to do this for 50-some years. So I have a very extensive collection of a lot of different things, from buttons to pennants to bobbleheads to ashtrays to programs to tickets, you name it. But my advice to collectors is start off with one specific focus, and that is don't go across all lines. Like if you say you want to collect football memorabilia for Michigan, it can get overwhelming. Say you're going to focus on bobbleheads or programs or tickets, just one, and see how that goes. And my other advice to them is this. Buy the older stuff, always find the newer stuff. So if you're going to spend $100 on an item, it's better to spend $100 on an item from the 1930s than $100 on 10 items from 1998, because you'll always find the 98 items. And so your collection might be a little bit smaller, but it will be much more quality because you'll always be able to find those things. So that's my advice to collectors. And then in regards to how do you find the book, you go to umichfootball.org. I'm sorry, let me change that. U, like university, Mich, M-I-C-H, football.com, not org.
Yep.
umichfootball.com. Or call me at 503-781-3174. This is a limited edition print run. We are accepting pre-orders now. And along with pre-orders, not only do you get a $10 discount, but you also get a special card that we invented that's 8x10, which has over a dozen watercolor character sketches of Michigan football uniforms dating back to the 1800s, suitable for framing.
Wow.
It just looks really cool. And he gave us permission to advertise our product and advertise his print that way. So when you print a book and publish a book of 680 pages, all color, it's quite expensive. So we go with, and we are self-publishers. We are doing it all on our own. So that's why we're seeking as many pre-orders as possible. So when we pick up the book, mid-August, we'll be able to ship them right out to the people who already purchased them.
Would you sign my copy if I order one, Ken?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And all you got to do, if you want that $10 discount, go onto that code and put the code GOBLUE. GOBLUE. And that gives you a $10 discount. And Brian and I will be, believe it or not, the books are being published right in my hometown of Chelsea, Michigan. That's not my hometown. It's where I live now. Ann Arbor is my hometown. But 750 books will be coming off the press soon, and we're very blessed that we've got a great product going. And also, if you're interested, Joe, in the Collector's Guide, the other book, we've got some of those available, and there's a discount on that one as well.
I like that brown jug one. That looks funny.
We're literally out of time. I appreciate you taking time on your schedule and talk about it. Joe, we got a 30-second, 2-minute warning. Hand it off to you. What did you pick up on tonight's show?
I have often wondered if Michigan State had discovered Tom Brady in 1999, 1998, how they would have done. Talking with Ken makes me wonder that even more.
It was 1996.
Amazing.
Oh, I was off. 96? I thought
96.
He...
96. His first game was against UCLA. That's the first time he ever suited up as a young football player.
Ah, okay. I was off by a couple of years. Well, yeah. Imagine what he would have been.
We're literally out of time. Thanks for listening. Check out our website, GridironGeeksMagazine.com. If you're going to be at the National, check out our table, booth 1904. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.